Hello, everyone. My name is Arvind Krishna. I'm a program manager in the Azure Cosmos DB team. In this session, I'll show you how to build a massive scale, globally distributed database app in minutes with Azure Cosmos DB. Before we go get down to writing apps, let's take a step back to see how Azure Cosmos DB came to be. Back in 2010 or 2011, there were a number of teams within Microsoft that had very similar requirements. These were teams within Office, within the online services, within Xbox. All of these teams were building globally distributed applications. And they quickly realized that in order to build massively scalable, reliable applications, they needed a globally distributed database under the covers. So this is the sequence of events that led to the creation of Azure Cosmos DB. So why is this important? Why do you need a distributed database? One reason, of course, the first one that comes to mind, is you need a database that is highly available. And by highly available, I mean 4 nines, so 99.99% availability, or 5 nines, so 99.999% availability. So what does this mean? In order to support this high availability, the database has to be spread across multiple physical servers, so hardware failures doesn't affect your availability so much. You can roll out upgrades to your database application, your OS, perform OS patches without bringing down the availability of your application. A critical component to this is, of course, can the database continue to serve reads and writes in the event of a regional failure? So can the application be more highly available than the availability of a single region? So that was one reason to have a globally distributed database. The second reason was scalability. So can the database scale? So one of the big concerns for all of the engineering teams who were building these applications was, can I write my application with a design that will survive 10x growth, that will survive 100x growth, without having to re-architect my entire application as my request volume increases or my storage size increases? Cosmos DB lets developers do this. And this is because it can seamlessly scale your data across multiple partitions, multiple servers, or even multiple geographic regions based on growth of data. In addition to this, of course, Cosmos DB lets you scale throughput. So if you have requests, if your request rate starts from going to thousands of millions of requests per second, then it can seamlessly allow that scalability. So harnessing the full elasticity of the cloud, and this not just affects performance, but it also affects the total cost of ownership. So how can the database be cost effective for these large scale applications? Was another problem that we set out to solve. And in addition to this, can the database be fast and responsive regardless of the amount of data under storage? So another goal was, we are using distribution, can the database serve low latency, single digit millisecond reads and writes, regardless of the amount of data under storage or regardless of the number of requests going on at the same time? Now, in addition to all of these benefits of distribution, there are also some considerations around availability. And namely, this was, how does the application roll out schema upgrades or perform index management? So how do you make changes to the schema of your application without affecting the underlying availability? So this led to the conclusion that the database has to be schema as well as index agnostic. So a database that has all of these capabilities is distributed as well as a schema and index agnostic. So this was the goal of Cosmos DB. And in addition to this, of course, as your data is distributed, how does the database let you write correct distributed systems applications? So applications that don't have the problem of introducing subtle bugs because your data could be replicated at different rates, or it could be stale in a remote location. So Cosmos DB also set out to solve the problem of giving developers well-defined trade-offs, so they don't have to choose between radical extremes like strong consistency or eventual consistency. So this was the history behind Cosmos DB. So what does Cosmos DB provide to you as an application developer? Number one is global distribution. So if you look at Azure has the biggest footprint of regions among any cloud provider. You can provision your web services, your cloud services in any of 40 plus geographic regions, as well, including the sovereign regions. So what you can do with Cosmos DB is you can take pre-provision accounts, and for those accounts, you can associate any subset of these regions. So you can have your account running in one region, or two regions, or up to 40 plus regions. And the service seamlessly performs the replication among these regions. The service also provides multi-homing APIs within all of the SDKs, including the .NET SDK, where you can have your app deployed and talking to the endpoint that is closest to it. In addition to this, Cosmos DB provides comprehensive SLAs. So the service provides 5 nines availability for SLA for reads and 4 nines availability SLA for all other operations, and it does it across the world. So in addition to this, when you have your application deployed in Cosmos DB, you can perform failovers at any point in time. You can perform manual failovers of your application, and Cosmos DB will seamlessly replicate your data and transfer writes to another region. And when you perform manual failovers, Cosmos DB guarantees that there is no data loss and there is no availability loss to your application. So you can test the business continuity of your application by using manual failovers. You can also assume that the service will handle regional failures automatically. Within Cosmos DB, you can specify not just manual failovers, but in the event that a region were to fail down, you can specify the order in which the regional failover should be performed. And this is beneficial because you can make sure that the service fails over your data to a region where your application standby is running. So the service was built to provide these capabilities to a developer in order to build these highly available, globally distributed applications. The other aspect about Cosmos DB is that it provides the choice of API to developers. So you can come to Cosmos DB and program with the API of your choice and get the benefit of all these platform capabilities like global distribution. And there are a couple of key advantages to this approach. Number one, if you have different sets of applications that need a key value store or a document store or a graph store, in the past you had to deploy them on different databases, manage them separately, have different semantics for scaling them. And so this places an operational cost for your application. What Cosmos DB provides is the same platform capabilities and the manageability across any of these APIs. So you can use the document API to insert data, and then you can perform graph traversals on top of it, and you can seamlessly switch between these APIs. It's a true multimodal API, and I'll show you a few more examples of how you can use this multimodal capability to your advantage. The third is Elastic Scaleout. Now, I mentioned this briefly, but in Cosmos DB, you create containers of storage and throughput, and these containers can scale to unlimited storage. And what you do is, when you provision your container, you specify a throughput in terms of requests per second, and you specify a partition key to instruct the service that these are the data, how the data is related to each other. And the service seamlessly scales your data across partitions as it grows. So if you start small, you might end up in one partition, but as your data grows or as your request throughput increases, the service can seamlessly scale you across multiple servers. And the service bills you independently for storage and throughput. So within each container, you're only paying for per gigabyte of usage, as well as the provision throughput in terms of requests per second. So if you have different kinds of workloads that have a large volume of data under storage but have less amount of request throughput, or the other way around, a small amount of data that's accessed heavily, then Cosmos DB lets you be cost effective for either kind of workload. And lastly, when you deal with global distribution, there are a bunch of trade-offs that you have as an application developer. Number one, if you take the conventional approach to data replication, you have strong consistency, which is at one end, what it does is make sure that every data is durably committed to every replica of your data set. So what this means in terms of global distribution is that writes can take higher latency. So you get a consistent behavior from the standpoint of your applications because they would never see a stale data, but the cost that you pay for it is that now your writes take longer. Or when you need to perform reads, you might have to consult multiple copies of your data to retrieve the latest version of data. So which means that your throughput is you now need twice the throughput to serve strongly consistent reads. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have eventual consistency, which is adopted by a number of applications. With eventual consistency, you get great performance, you get low latency, you get lower throughput. But this also means that your application has no guarantees as to if your data that it's reading is stale or if it's up to date. So what we found is that there are many gray many click stops in between. So you don't have to choose between these radical extremes of strong consistency and eventual consistency. So Cosmos DB provides these click stops, including bounded staleness, which means that if your application might read stale data, but the service guarantees that it will never be more stale than your specified window. The service also provides session consistency, which is great for a large number of applications which are user-oriented or session-oriented. You can take the example of a social media app that needs to perform reads and writes for a user. It's all user-focused. Like, for example, if you make an update to your Twitter account or your Facebook account, what session consistency provides is that you will get strong consistency for writes that are made for your own writes. So you can read your own writes, and you always see reads. You get monotonic reads. This means that when you perform an update to your profile and you click refresh, you will always see your updates. But your friends, however, might see them out of order or see a delayed copy of the data. But this gives you that great experience for users who are updating their own profiles, which is so you get the best of both worlds of strong consistency and eventual consistency. And consistent prefix is another click stop which guarantees that you never see out of order writes. So here, Cosmos DB, what it does is very similar to how relational databases codified isolation levels. Here, the service provides consistency levels with real-world practical applications, as well as behavior that you can rationalize as an application developer. The service also provides a single-digit millisecond latency at any scale. So what does this mean? So when you perform reads and writes in Cosmos DB, Cosmos DB one has a write-optimized database engine that's latch-free, that's designed for high volume of ingestion. It's customized for modern hardware. So Cosmos DB can ingest massive volumes of data at low latency. When you perform writes in Cosmos DB, they take typically about 5 to 6 milliseconds. And at the high end, at the 99th percentile, the service guarantees that writes will complete under 15 milliseconds. And these are quorum committed writes. They are durably committed to disk and synchronously indexed within 15 milliseconds. Now for reads, at the other end, Cosmos DB is able to exploit the performance of its engine to perform automatic index against the content as it gets ingested. So it also lets you perform low latency reads. Now, if you're performing reads by ID, Cosmos DB provides about a millisecond to 2 milliseconds for reads. And at the high end, it guarantees an upper bound that reads will always complete under 10 milliseconds at the 99th percentile. So there are this is, of course, within the scope of a data center. But one thing to realize is if your user base is spread across the world, there are two components to latency. The first component to latency is how fast the database is. And the second is how much time it takes for the data to get transmitted from where your user sits to where or where your application runs to where the database is. And this cannot be any faster than the speed of light between these two locations. If you have a database that's running in the West US and you have applications running in Australia, for example, then it would take 250 milliseconds just for the transmission of that data alone. So a key to this is bringing data close to where your users are or where your application runs. In Cosmos DB, because it's globally distributed, regardless of where your application is running, you can get this single-digit millisecond latency anywhere in Azure. And lastly, in Cosmos DB provides comprehensive industry-leading SLAs. And this includes, of course, within a region, you get four nines availability. In addition to availability, the service also provides SLAs on consistency. So the service will never give you a read that does not satisfy the given consistency level, so in terms of staleness. The service guarantees that your provision throughput is available to your application. The service also guarantees your latency, so reads will always complete under 10 milliseconds, and writes always complete within 15 milliseconds. So to sum things up, the way Cosmos DB works is it provides all of these platform capabilities. So single-digit millisecond latency, turnkey global distribution. It provides you well-defined consistency levels to build correct distributed systems applications, elastic scaling of storage and throughput. And on top of this, it provides a bunch of these APIs. And on one end is the core API, which is SQL and JavaScript based. It used to be called the DocumentDB API. And in addition to this, the service also provides a number of APIs for popular first-party and third-party NoSQL services, including Table API, which is similar to the Azure Table Storage Service, MongoDB API, and Gremlin, which is for graph traversals. So in this session, we'll look at what it takes to build applications using .NET and a couple of these APIs. So first, let's build a simple app. To begin with, let's not worry about global scale. Let's build a simple to-do list application. So what this does is it's an a single page ASP.NET MVC app that lets you add to-do list items, and it uses Cosmos DB behind the scenes to store these items and query over these items. So let me switch over to my screen and is this good? Awesome. So let's take a quick look at getting started with Cosmos DB and writing your first app. So let's first create a Cosmos DB account. So I am in the Azure portal, that's portal.azure.com. In here, I navigate to databases, pick Cosmos DB, let me call it .NET.conf, Cosmos DB, and API, I'll pick the SQL Cosmos DB API. I'll use my resource group. And location, I'll pick West US since that's closest to where I am in Redmond. And the service also lets you enable geo redundancy by default, so it picks a second region so you can remain highly available in case of disaster. I will skip this for now. So I'll kick off create, and this will create a Cosmos DB account in a couple of minutes. So what I'll do is, let me switch over while this account is being created to another account that I've already created up front. So this account, is created with a SQL API. It's ready to go. Now, the first thing that you do when you get set up with Cosmos DB is you can go to the Quick Start and download a completed application that is configured with the connection string, and it's ready to run. So let me run through the steps in the Quick Start. So I find Quick Start in the left navigation, and I click Create this Items Collection. So this will be used by Cosmos DB to store my to-do list items. And this should get created shortly. And I can click download, and this will download this ASP.NET application. So I have this already unzipped over here. So this is my .NET application that I downloaded from there. Let me switch over So this is the application. So let's take a quick look at the web.config in this application. So in web.config, you'll see a couple of interesting properties. So this is the endpoint of my account. We just saw this over at the portal. And this is the authorization key for my account. It has a couple of other settings like database and collection that are used to store these items. Now in packages.config, you'll see that we have a dependency on NewtonSoft and of course on Cosmos DB. So this is the SDK for Cosmos DB. So let's look at the code real quick. So there is a single controller here. This is for creating items, and much of the heavy lifting is performed by the repository class. So let's run through this really quickly. Let me launch my to-do list application, and this will start my ASP.NET application. So I have no to-do list items, so let me go create .NET conf. Let's just put some description over here. This is cool. Click create. So I have, let me create another one. This is also cool. So I have created a bunch of these to-do list items. So let's look through the code to see what we have to do to set this up. So this is, again, let me go load my source explorer. So here I have a simple controller. So this is my item controller, and as you can see, it has a bunch of methods. Most of the heavy lifting is performed by this DocumentDB repository class. So let's skip ahead to the repository class. In the repository class, you have a bunch of these methods. So for example, you have getItemsAsync. GetItemAsync that takes an ID, and all it does behind the scenes is it calls ReDocumentAsync, which is a property in the Cosmos DB SDK. And it returns a document back, and here we dynamically cast it to the type T that we need for the repository. And that's pretty much it. And it handles cases where the item's not found, and it throws a document client exception. You also have getItemsAsync, so this is what we use in the front end to display all of the items that need to be completed. So here you see we have a link query. So this is Cosmos DB's link provider, and you can see it takes some arguments that let you optimize how the query is executed. So in this case, this is the number of items that are returned in every round trip to the server. And you also see that it takes a predicate which is passed right to the link provider, and this is executed efficiently on the server as a SQL query. I'll show you a little bit of what happens behind the scenes here. And furthermore, create item is just a thin shim around create document async. Update item is just a shim around a replace document async. Same for delete document async. There is also a method in here for initialization. So what it does is it simply creates a database if it doesn't exist. And if the collection, which is the container of storage and throughput, if it doesn't exist, then again, Cosmos DB, the repository class simply creates it. And as you notice, one of the options that are passed into the collection creation is the request throughput in terms of request units per second. So what happens when you trigger these calls behind the scenes? So I have a Fiddler open, and this kind of tells you how these calls from the SDK get translated to the Cosmos DB service. Let me switch over to this. And so this is the first call which gets the metadata for the particular account endpoint. And in this case, of course, the response that comes back from the service returns a bunch of a configuration as well as the readable endpoints of the account. So the client SDK can at any point dynamically fall back between these regions in case of a regional failure. The service also sends back the current write endpoint as well as the read endpoints. So the client SDKs know how to route reads and writes. The next response, of course, is we create a database. And then once we create a database, the service also sends back, create a database and create a collection. The service sends back metadata about the collection. So in this case, the service sends back the indexing policy. It also sends back information such as how the topology of that collection, how the data is spread across physical partitions. Because the client SDK then can use this information to make connections directly to data partitions for really low latency access. Then we get to the part where we see the part of the page that displays items for to-do list items that need to be performed. And here, you can also see what happens over here is that the service sends a SQL query. So you see a post made against Cosmos DB and a SQL query that gets run sent over the wire. And of course, in this case, initially you had no items come back, and as we added more and more items, you see that two items got sent back from the service. So let's take a closer look at what it's like to work with this query. At any point in time, you can go to the Data Explorer in Cosmos DB and run SQL queries against it, the same SQL query that you saw the link provider translate to. So for example, the data that I inserted, .NET.conf, and another one, I can run a query to say, get me all of these items. And if I wanted to, edit an item, I can go edit this item, mark it completed. And now, when I switch back here, I can, for example, find the item that I marked as completed. Let me refresh my page real quick. So while we get the Data Explorer loading, okay, it's right here. While we get that loading, let me walk you through a couple of other options. So we looked at a simple to-do list application. So this application is built for 1,000 requests per second. So what do we need to do if we want to scale this application to 1,000,000 requests per second? So in this example, let me take a look at the changes that I would have to make this application run at massive scale. The first thing I'm going to do is configure a partition key for my collection. So in this case, let me copy the same definition. So I have a document collection. Then I have to set a partition key for my account. So what I'll do is set. So in this case, we have a bunch of to-do list items, and most of our access is by ID. So here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick ID as the partition key for my collection. So I pass in this definition to create document collection. And what I'm going to do is simply change the throughput of my collection, 10,000, 100,000, 1 million. So this is pretty much all you need if you need to scale this exact same to-do list application to 1,000,000 requests per second. And Cosmos DB can handle the splitting of data, the routing of requests to handle that throughput seamlessly. Of course, in this example, I showed you how to create a collection upfront for 1,000,000 requests per second. You don't have to start that way. You could always start with 1,000 requests per second. And as your data grows, you can increase it to 1,000,000 requests per second. But the key to this, of course, is ensuring that you have a partition key definition for your collection so the service can distribute your data across multiple partitions. The service would never split a partition key across multiple physical partitions because it provides full ACID transaction guarantees within the scope of a partition key. So the second aspect, so now that we have our application scaled out, so we are back this thing, so I'll quickly show you the query that I wanted to run. So you can run isComplete equals true, or you can go for example, extend this query to run select count of one. So you can perform aggregations. You can run all of these queries on the Cosmos DB collection. So now that we looked at scaling horizontally across partitions, let's look at what global distribution looks like. So in every account, you can configure a number of region accounts, the number of regions associated with it. So in here, in my account, I have configured West US as my read region, and I have configured three other as my write region, and I have configured three other read regions. So at any point between these regions, I can perform a manual failover to another region by clicking. I understand that I am about to perform a manual failover to my region. I can also perform, I can enable automatic failover, and I can specify the list of priorities. I can move the priority of these regions to match the topology of my application as deployed in other regions. So once you have deployed your application in multiple regions, how do you configure this application, for example, this to-do list application, to read from all of these different endpoints, to read from the copy of data that's closest to it? So let me switch back to my application. So initially, of course, let's assume that this is the application that I would deploy to the West US region. In that case, I need to make no changes to the application because the client SDK will preferentially talk to the write region by default. But what if I was to deploy this application to the East US region and have it read from the East US endpoint? So what I can do is configure the connection policy of my account. So in connection policy, there is a property called preferred locations. In preferred locations, you can specify the regions in the order of preference. So in this case, I'm running in East US region. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have it read from East US region first. So I say first preference is East US. And then of course, in case East US were to fail, I want a fallback, so I'll have it read from West US as the secondary preference. And for best performance, we recommend that you always set connection mode to direct and connection protocol to TCP, which is a lightweight protocol. So in this mode, what the SDK would talk directly to the data partitions, instead of talking through the document DB gateway, so you get lower latency. It could be up to a millisecond difference by picking direct connectivity. And pass this to the argument of my SDK. And let me switch this back. So that's pretty much what you need to initialize your connection policy. I guess my naming was off, so call it as connection policy. So this is pretty much all you need to configure your account in the East US region using the multi-homing APIs. Now, when you're deploying your application to West US, what you would do is switch the order between these preferred locations. So you would read from the West US location preferentially and fall back to the East US location as secondary. So this is pretty much how you configure multi-homing APIs and extend your to-do list application to run across a large number of servers. So that was the Cosmos DB API. Now let's look as part of the next demo. Let me show you about how to move from Azure Table Storage to Cosmos DB. Now Azure Table Storage was one of the first highly scalable NoSQL data storage services on Azure. if you have applications that are written using Azure Table Storage, and you need these capabilities such as single-digit millisecond latency, if you need automatic secondary indexes, if you need global distribution, you can easily port those applications to Cosmos DB with no code changes to your application. And this is using the Cosmos DB's table API, which works with .NET. So in this session, in this section, let me walk you through how you can get started with the table API for Cosmos DB. So in this example, what I've done is I have created a Cosmos DB account using the table API. So let me switch to that account. So this account that I have over here is created with the table API. And as you can see here, of course, I have in my quick start, I have, instead of the Cosmos DB API quick starts, I have table API-based quick starts. And the table API-based quick starts, let me switch over to the Visual Studio a project that has a table API quick start. So this is very similar. If you're a developer who is used to Azure Table Storage, it looks identical. And one of the key differences, of course, is in place of the storage NuGet package, you have to switch to use the premium table Windows storage premium table NuGet package, which is identical to the storage SDK in terms of API signatures and compatibility. But what it provides is the ability to talk to a table that's created on Cosmos DB as well as regular standard table storage. So if you look at this application, this is pretty much just using the table storage API. So you have a connection string, and within the connection string, you get a cloud table client, and within the cloud table client, pretty much we call table table create if not exists, and then we skip ahead and call table operation execute, and so this is an insert that gets performed using the table SDK. We have retrieves, which are gets by partition key and row key. We also have table query. So this is queries that are performed in table storage. And of course, the delete operation. So all of this is pretty standard table storage SDKs, but they can run against Cosmos DB. And the benefits that you will see, for example, in the case of the query, is because Cosmos DB has automatic indexing against all properties, this query on email will still get executed against index and be performed efficiently. You can also control things such as the provision throughput for your tables. This way you can make sure that your application never gets throttled, even if you exceed the scalability targets of a standard table storage account. So when you provision when you create tables from the SDK, you can control by setting the apps, going to app settings and configuring table throughput. So in this case, I have configured it to 400 request units. You can control how much throughput is provisioned for the table. And this throughput is, of course, reserved for you and backed by SLAs. In addition to this, you can also, for example, pass in the consistency level for your client applications. You can also set the preferred locations, similar to how we looked at the multi-homing APIs. You can set a list of preferred regions, and you can have table storage running at 4 nines availability within regions or 5 nines across regions for mission-critical applications using the premium API. So that is pretty much all you need to get started with the table storage API for Cosmos DB. Let's now take a look at the newer API, which is the Gremlin Graph API. Now, Cosmos DB, in addition to the document and key value APIs, lets you perform graph traversals. And now, for performing graph traversals, Cosmos DB uses the open source Gremlin Graph API. So here in this model, you can insert vertices and edges, and you can perform traversals to say, you know, what are all the vertices that satisfy a constraint, and who are the friends of a friend, or if you want to build a recommendation system, or if you want to perform fraud detection to understand the network and connections between various accounts, you can do those efficiently using the Gremlin Graph API. And what we've done is, Gremlin is commonly used in the open source ecosystem with Python and Java, We have built a first-party .NET driver for Gremlin, and this is built on top of the Cosmos DB SDK. So you get all of the benefits, like controlling the serialization of objects to graphs and reading them back, and integrating with Cosmos DB to perform the same platform capabilities, like configuring collections, as well as issuing queries over the underlying data. So let me quickly show you what the quick start for graphs looks like. So this is again a Cosmos DB account that is created using the Graph API, and you'll notice that this looks very similar to the document DB example that we saw so far. So this is a document DB client, and this is because Gremlin doesn't have the equivalent of management and provisioning APIs. It's a query API for accessing your data that is under a container. So we perform the exact same steps where we create a database if it doesn't exist. We create a graph container and we store items inside of it. And then we run a bunch of Gremlin queries. So here you can see in Gremlin syntax, it's much like SQL syntax, but in a functional language. So here you can call g.v to extract all of the vertices. You can perform a dot drop, which would essentially delete all of the data in your collection. You can perform add vertex to insert data. You can perform traversals. So in this case, I'm saying start with Thomas, find all of the people he knows, and add an edge between Thomas to Mary to say that Thomas knows Mary. And so you can insert edges between documents. You can perform traversals. So in this case, I'm finding all of the people in my graph with an age greater than 40. You can perform traversals to say, who are my friends? Who are Thomas's friends of type person? And you can do this any number of times. For example, you can say, who are Thomas's friends and who are their friends? So you get the two-level circle of friends around Thomas. And lastly, you can build upon this to have more powerful logic. So here, this says perform loops or perform this transitive closure where you find all of the people, like who are the people that you have to know to get a connection from Thomas to Robin, and you know who are the people around the 7 degrees of separation between these two. So this kind of logic, this powerful kind of graph operations can be performed using the Graph API. When you're working with Graph API, this works pretty much the same way, like where you can use iDocument query and you can call the client.create Gremlin query and you get an iQueryable back and you can iterate through results. So in addition to this, of course, the Cosmos DB SDK also provides first-class properties like vertices and edges. So you can serialize the data that gets sent back to graphs and as you strongly type vertex objects, and you can perform the necessary transformations that you want behind the code. And one of the things that we are working towards is the ability to switch seamlessly between these APIs. So another sample that we have over here, it shows you how the power of a multimodal API, where you can start using, like in this case, what we did is inserted a bunch of documents which are around the information about counties in the state of Washington. So this is information between the counties which we insert using the core document DB API. And what you can do is you can switch over to the Graph API, and then when you're accessing the data in the Graph API, automatically all the documents that you created from the document DB API are seamlessly translated as vertices in the Graph API. So now you can use them to perform graph traversals. So in this example, of course, now I can use the Graph API to add additional counties to my data set. And I can also go over here and say, add relationships, add edges between these states. So what is the road network across these counties? So I insert edges between these, which of course internally also gets stored in Cosmos DB as entities. And now that I have my vertices and edges, I can run graph traversals to find, you know, what are all the reachable counties from King counties? What are all the counties that can be reached using interstates? So in this case, I'm performing a query over a property of the edge. And of course, how do I How do I reach King County? What are the different paths I can take from King County to Multnomah County? So you can run repeat until to go find all of these paths. So again, this is very powerful. It has a ton of applications where you have logistics routing, or you want to find how one component in your IoT infrastructure affects the other. And you run this on the same underlying data without having to export it and import it to another different graph database. So in this session, we looked at a bunch of different ways to use .NET and Cosmos DB together. Now, Cosmos DB, in the beginning, I talked about the first-party applications that were responsible for the creation of Cosmos DB. But today, it's used in a wide range of applications. For example, Domino's uses Azure Cosmos DB for driving its ordering pipeline, which needs to be highly available. It needs to be highly responsive in multiple geographies. Toyota uses Cosmos DB for its telematics and connected car platform. So here, vehicle diagnostics get ingested into Cosmos DB. So it's the fact that it is highly scalable, it's right optimized, and is very conducive to perform distributed analytics like Spark processing was one of the key drivers for Toyota to move to Cosmos DB. It's used in a lot of these marketing and analytics platforms as well as user-centric applications. For example, Real Madrid's social media site uses Cosmos DB to store information about users, about chat messages, and their interactions. Jet.com, which is a popular retailer, uses Cosmos DB as an event store, which is used for brokering and coordination of events and workflows across multiple microservices. For example, when their ordering system needs to convey that certain reservations need to be made by the inventory system, it simply writes an event to Cosmos DB. And there are multiple consumers of these events using Cosmos DB's change feed capabilities that listens to these events and perform downstream actions. And of course, it's used in a wide range of applications, including gaming, where in gaming, for example, the fact that Cosmos DB can scale in a few seconds gives it a lot of flexibility for game developers to introduce new features, as well as add a lot of social features which need to perform queries against new and changing attributes in Cosmos DB. So you can get started with Cosmos DB at any time. You can go, we've recently announced a free offer of Cosmos DB where there is no commitment, there is no sign up, no credit card. You can go and provision Cosmos DB and play with any of these APIs. You can of course also sign up for an Azure account and sign up for a free Cosmos DB account. So I have a question over here. Someone asked, is there any significant difference in performance between the different APIs used to access Cosmos DB? So the answer to this is Cosmos DB provides the same SLAs on performance across any of these APIs. But all things being equal, there are some capabilities that are available only in the core API. For example, in the core DocumentDB API, the service provides a direct connectivity to the data partitions, versus having to talk to a gateway that forwards the request along. The service provides native multi-homing APIs and things like it can expose retry semantics on request count, so it can optimize the retry interval in kinds of failure conditions. So in practice, if you're starting with a brand new application, you should probably use the DocumentDB API, but all APIs are treated equal in terms of performance. There's also another question that asks, are all the same R Python language capabilities available against Cosmos DB? Yes, so in Cosmos DB, you can use R and Python because it's a schemaless database that's really built for dynamic typing. And of course, it's tightly integrated with Spark. So if you want to perform big data and data science based ML and data science based processing, the flexibility as well as the fact that it can support large volumes of reads and writes makes it super suitable for R, Python, and any kind of ML based framework. So. So in conclusion, Azure Cosmos DB, it's really easy with Azure Cosmos DB. You can build globally distributed applications Just with a few lines of code, the service can scale seamlessly with your application in the same geography across data centers, as well as across multiple geographic regions as your application evolves.